morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It is the 8th of January and 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Hello. Let us get to the proceedings and remind you that you can be a part of the program. All you have to do is write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you on the range of topics that we'll be discussing over the next 90 minutes or so. Let me introduce the group to you as well. Executive Vice President and Vice President for Academic Affairs. I guess it's two vice presidents. It's Executive Vice President?
You know, Bart, as I told you before, Bart likes to give titles, not money, so I got a lot of titles.
Okay. Academic Affairs at Bard College and Director for the Center for Civic Engagement and Professor of Political Studies. For the purposes of our conversation, he's our good friend, Jonathan Becker. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I did want to say I'm really happy to be here for two reasons. I just want to say that in 26 years ago yesterday, I was meant to have been on WAMC. I told Joe about this in November, and I had to cancel because my son was born, so he turned 26 yesterday. And 26 years ago today, I was in Albany. He actually had to go up to the NICO at the Albany Medical Center, and I just want to call out my thanks, my deep, profound thanks to the folk at Albany Medical Center who do such a wonderful job.
That's great. It's perhaps the best, two things. One, the best excuse for not being able to be on the program at any given time. And two, it takes us a long time to call you back, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I apologize for
it was a quarter century, but that's okay.
But so is the show. That's what's incredible to me. But oh well, it's wonderful to have you here, and we thank you very, very much. We also welcome Judy Patrick, former Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I am fine. You know, many years ago when I was a young reporter, I was given the option of getting a $10 a week raise or getting called a senior reporter, and I stupidly chose the senior reporter. I could have used that $10.
Could have used the $10.
Especially when I think my salary was 80 or 90, so.
That seems silly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Because they probably could have done both. Yeah. Well, there you go. Executive Director of the Legal Aid Society of just the problem with the Pittsburgh Post. They gave too many. That's what they did. Executive Director of the Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York, Nick Rangel, is here. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty okay. I mean, the news is always tragic.
Yeah.
But I did want to just shout out Letty Dickerson for receiving the LGBTQ Vanguard Award from the New York State Bar Association. We're celebrating next week, but he's the senior attorney for LGBTQ rights at Empire Justice Center here in Albany, and we're really proud.
Awesome. Congratulations to all involved, and that's a wonderful award, and congratulations. Good news there. Wonderful things happening in our community. Before we get started, I just want to remind you our lockbox is underway. It is open and ready for you. The lockbox is a very important mechanism that allows us to make some money before we actually hit the airwaves with all cylinders going, and it allows us to not interrupt the shows as much and also to make money before the fund drive officially begins. We would love your help. We are doing this once again. I mentioned this yesterday. I'll mention it again today, which is if you just look at our last fund drive, and we had a tremendous outpouring during the lockbox, and it allowed us to finish our fund drive in just under 3 days. So that is a remarkable. We would love to do that again. In fact, maybe not even have a fund drive at all, if we could. Because we, as Nick so astutely pointed out, we have a lot of news to talk about, and we don't want to take those opportunities away from you. We want you to hear what you want to hear. So, with that, WAMC.org is a great place to go to help us out in the fund drive. You can also go then give us a call, 800-323-9262. But as always, at these times when we don't have volunteers and such, it is always better to go to wamc.org, wamc.org. Okay, so we have a lot of news, and the big news that, of course, what happened yesterday, which there's still the Venezuela story, there's still Greenland, there is still the economy, many other stories that are making news. The story yesterday that really looked that kind of paused us for a while was that there was a ICE killing in Minneapolis, and a motorist was driving. There are videos. I assume everyone in this room has seen the videos. I don't know how you avoid seeing the video.
Yes,
but it's horrible and tragic. And however you come down on it, it's hard to watch. And watching anyone lose their life is especially difficult. But this fatal shooting by ICE follows weeks of turmoil in Minnesota. Then it comes down to the actual footage that takes place. So we know that a 37-year-old woman was killed, and she was driving. A ICE agent approached the car, attempted to open the car door. The operator of the vehicle backed up slightly as if to take a sharper right turn down the road because they were sort of sideways on the road. And at that point, an officer who had also approached the vehicle and came from it from behind the Honda Pilot and went around to the rear passenger door, past the passenger door to the front of the car. As the car was leaving, three shots were fired. We know three shots because of the audio on the videos that were presented. So that's what information were going on there. The New York Times reports an analysis of footage from three camera angles shows that the motorist was driving away from, not toward, a federal officer when he opened fire. That from the New York Times. This is important because in the moments after this tragedy, both the president and the head of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, both said, in calling the driver a domestic terrorist, said that they were using the vehicle as a weapon to try and harm and or kill the officers who were there responding to the event. There's one other thing I want to mention about this before I turn it over to the panel, because there is now a great a great debate going on between federal officials as well as the local officials in Minnesota, who the Minneapolis, Minnesota officials are really mad, and they swore a lot yesterday, and all of that was broadcast, and I was surprised. But anyway, in the aftermath, Kristi Noem said the woman had committed an act of domestic terrorism, first disobeying orders, commands, and then weaponizing her SUV by attempting to run a law enforcement officer over. President Donald Trump said the woman violently, willfully, and viciously ran over the ICE officer. A frame-by-frame analysis of video footage, however, raises questions about those accounts. The SUV did move toward the ICE agent as he stood in front of it, but the agent was able to move out of the way and fire at least two or of three shots from the side of the vehicle as it veered past him, according to an analysis of those videos. Video taken by a witness shows that Renee Nicole Good's vehicle, a burgundy Honda Pilot SUV, stopped in the middle of a one-way road in a residential area in South Minneapolis on Wednesday morning. That footage and other videos examined by the Washington Post do not show the events leading up to that moment. So what brought them there to that time of that video that we have all seen with the pickup truck coming up to the left, the pilot parked somewhat off to the side on the right? The agent, who has not been publicly identified, can be seen standing behind Good's SUV, holding up a phone and pointing it toward a woman who also has her phone out. The two appear to be recording each other. The agent then walks around the passenger side of Good's vehicle. A pickup truck pulls up and two additional agents exit the vehicle and approach Good. A voice can be heard saying to get out of the car at least two times. One of the agents puts a hand on the opening of the driver's side window and with the other hand tugs twice quickly on the door handle, but the driver's door does not open. That same agent puts his hand farther in the opening of Good's window and almost simultaneously the SUV begins to back up. The agent, who was first seen behind Good's SUV, reemerges in front of the vehicle, still appearing to hold up a phone. The SUV quickly pulls forward and then veers to the right in the correct direction of traffic on the one-way street. As the vehicle moves forward, video shows the agent moves out of the way and at nearly the same time fires the first shot. The footage shows that his other two shots were fired from the side of the vehicle. These videos examined by the Washington Post, also examined by the New York Times, including one shared on Truth Social by President Trump, do not clearly show whether the agent is struck or how close the front of the vehicle comes to striking him. This is something that is also important. Was the other officer indeed struck by the vehicle? It's hard to tell in the video. What is not hard to tell is that after, if he were to be struck, he was walking around the scene for a while after after the event. Trump wrote in his post that it's hard to believe that he is alive. Video shows the agent walking around the scene for more several minutes after the shooting. Good's SUV then travels a short distance before crashing into a car parked on the opposite side of the street. All right. That is what I have for setup with help from the Washington Post. Let me go to our panel, Judy.
Right. So first of all, the early minutes of this, maybe the first hour or two, we were being told it was an officer involved shooting. Can I just say that is jargon that is does not describe what happened. It's a way of government agencies trying to soft pedal what is action, which was an officer shot someone. So that's what we mean by officer involved shooting. Glance over those. But far too many questions remain unanswered for people to be going to, you know, the world. Our country split into two different camps last night, or within minutes of this, and without fully recognizing all the questions that need to be asked, like how much training did this border official have? How much training do they all have? Is how many people were in this neighborhood? How militarized has have ICE officials become? Are they trained enough to work in an urban environment? What was happening before? What was happening after? I've seen video of a doctor trying to come to the rescue or at least trying to offer some aid and comfort to this woman being denied access. And who will be investigating this? You've got state, local, you got the FBI involved, you got ICE. Should ICE have any part in it? Obviously not. And why was Kristi Noem so quick to come out and condemn this as a terrorist attack? This is far too premature, far too hyperbolic. It's just, from my perspective, we just need to slow down and let the facts roll in. There's going to be other videos too, and let's look at them all and let's get more information before we start to make definitive conclusion about this event. But you can certainly talk about this whole issue about ICE, you know, coming into urban, suburban, suburban, rural environments in our country and scaring the heck out of everyone. I mean, I'm sure that lady was scared to death.
Absolutely. And what they were doing there at that time and what was happening prior, again, information we don't quite know yet as to what was happening, according to Kristi Noem in a press conference later in the day after the initial one in Texas. She then traveled to Minnesota and gave another press conference. At that press conference, she did say that they were also, again, working on, quote, rounding up Somalis as part of their efforts. Then that was wrapping up, and they were headed home when the vehicles from ICE got lodged in the snow. But what else happened there to lead up to everyone being on the street at that time still is questionable. Nick?
I mean, there's so many legal analysis that need to happen here. We know, for example, that Kristi Noem and Homeland Security is attempting to label much broader types of organizations and advocates as terrorists as a way to diminish and impact people's right to free speech. And that's maybe a conversation for a little bit later. But I do think that what we are seeing is an increasingly violent and excessive use of force by ICE. And I just wanted to read the use of force guidelines for ICE, because I think all of the arguments that we've heard about why this was a justified shooting clearly are misaligned with what the guidelines around when an ICE officer is allowed to shoot is stated. ICE policy requires any use of force, including firearms, be objectively reasonable and necessary given the situation. Deadly force is permissible only when an officer reasonably believes there's an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to themselves or others. In this case, we clearly saw that the officer could just get out of the way. We clearly saw that by shooting, the officer put even more people's lives at actual imminent risk because the driver lost control of an SUV. Force should only be used when other safe and effective options are not available. Clearly, there were other safe, effective options available. Deadly force is not permitted to prevent escape unless the escape poses imminent threat of serious harm. In this case, the person was not a wanted person. They were not an undocumented person. Immigrant who ICE had some authority to detain or arrest. There was no stated reason that this person couldn't leave the scene of a demonstration or protest. Officers are prohibited from firing at moving vehicles unless deadly force against the operator is otherwise warranted. And in this case, nobody has stated any warranted reason for firing at a person operating a vehicle who is going in the correct direction of traffic, who is leaving a demonstration, which they have a right to participate in. But then, in addition, what is the scope of authority here? The ICE officer has an obligation to turn over any criminal allegations about somebody who they are otherwise don't have a warrant to arrest to local law enforcement. ICE can't just go arresting civilian citizens on our street because they're protesting. That is outside of their authority in the first place. So, like, none of this seems to align even with the information that we have because of the statements that are being made by the administration.
In other words, if you're being taunted, if an agent is being taunted, if an agent is being yelled at, that still doesn't give someone the right to
shoot them.
To shoot them.
No, sir.
To fire into a vehicle as it is moving. Jonathan.
But there's also not evidence that we don't know that she was doing any of that.
No, we don't.
Right?
Even if
that was happening at a different point in the timeline of the day, at the point where she's shot, she's already in her car leaving. Right? She's not, it's not like in the heat of the moment, she's in his face and he feels somehow scared of a 37-year-old woman, but like she's not even engaging with him at that point. He's going after her.
And I don't know. And I clearly state I don't know, but there had to have been a reason that there were so many people on the sidelines who were taking the video. There was something going on that clued them in to take video.
This neighborhood has been doing this. So the neighborhood took up this practice of alerting the whole neighborhood when ICE vehicles were visible.
They would honk.
They were
the
honking,
horn.
And they would like descend and like record the disappearances of their neighbors, right? I mean, that is what they're recording. They're recording the disappearances of their friends and neighbors. And I saw some reports that there may have been protesters who were throwing snowballs, which, you know, does start to craft a different image of the type of demonstration or the extent to which the protesters were engaging with the ICE officers. But in the video where a person is shot, you only see the pursuit of the ICE officer of a person otherwise leaving a protest. And so there are a lot of questions, I think, to your point, Joe, that that will have to be answered in the broader scheme of that investigation.
Jonathan Becker.
Yes. I mean, first of all, I want to recognize that Renee Nicole Good died and that she left behind an orphan. And there's very few things we know, but that's one of the things that we know for sure. To me, I'd take a step back and say that this fits into broader developments within the United States. One of them is militarization of society. You know, the ICE budget tripled last year. They doubled the number of agents. And as Judy said, there's a real question as to what type of training these people had to have come. It doesn't seem like we're getting the best and the brightest. It does seem like people are being rushed into service. And their training for dealing with things like this is quite questionable. I will add as a side note that yesterday, and this is a headline which isn't getting enough attention as far as I'm concerned, President Trump talked about increasing the military budget from $900 billion to $1.5 billion. Dollars.
Okay. Trillion.
Trillion. 1.5. Thank you very much. Yeah. I mean, it's extraordinary. So we see this militarization both domestically through the growth of ICE, which is sort of the private political, private police force of the Department of Homeland Security. And we see it internationally. I think we see the stultification of dissent. And this is a case where people who are protesting what is going on are treated as terrorists. As Nick said, the deeper investigations that are going on are focusing on organizations which are organizing opposition to what is taking place in the country. I'm a Russianist when I'm not dealing with other things. And Vladimir Putin speaks of dictatorship of law. And by that, they mean wielding the law in ways to achieve the goals of the leadership. And much as the discussion we're having about the legal issues that are involved here, I have no faith whatsoever that the Department of Homeland Security will conduct a good faith investigation of what took place. And we saw that yesterday as you were discussing. Immediately they blame the person who was killed. Immediately they invoke language like domestic terrorism. And that is extremely disquieting. And then the third thing that we see going on in society is attack on people of color. And while it is true that Renee Nicole Good is white, the operation that is there, sending thousands of troops who are not very well trained, seemingly, to Minneapolis, was targeted at communities of people of color. So when you create these, I had said previously on the roundtable, when you create something you want to call the Department of War, right? You get a war. And we've seen that in, you know, the start of that in Venezuela. And when you create this privatized police force, when you double their numbers, you get actions like this in which citizens are killed. And that is extremely unfortunate and speaks very poorly of the state of democracy in our country.
One of the things that comes out of this to what you just said very articulately is the... What is the training of these officers? I mean, all I know is what I see of the recruiting that is taking place on television and other sources. I can only imagine.
You want to join the posse?
No, that's right. And so now we, from what I have heard, again, anecdotally, and I say that anecdotally because it's come from different like government sources, but the fact that this officer had indeed been with ICE for a while, again, unidentified. We don't know who it is yet. And also, Christy Noem said that he had been a part of another event where he was had an entanglement with an automobile and was dragged for a while. But I do think it brings up that question of this police force that you mention, of this law enforcement group, of what their training is and what they're ready for and the situations that they come in contact with. Because the other thing that seems obvious is they have a great deal of leeway to do what they want, which is the other problem.
I mean, just two things. First of all, it's not just it's the number. So you also look at this and you see there are vetting problems. People have gone through to serve as part of ICE who have criminal records, who have not passed various security checks. And even yesterday, it was interesting. I went back and looked at this very question about ICE training. And yesterday morning, before all of this happened, there was a report about the senator from Michigan, Gary Peters, who was questioning the training of the ICE personnel. And we see what happens. And just the last thing I would say is there is zero reason we should believe anything Christy Noem says. For her to say he was hit, maybe. We heard that he was hit here. He was incredibly dexterous for somebody who had just been assaulted by a car, seemingly afterwards, as there was video of him. So I think these are real questions. I don't think you could double the size of a force in such a short period of time and expect people to have really good training.
Now, he was snotty about it because that's just kind of how he is. But Mike Johnson coming out yesterday said, look, we don't know. He said, I don't know what happened. You don't know what's happening, talking to the press. But what we do know is that we have to take a look at it. We have to investigate it. And we have to find out and get to the bottom of it. And I thought, okay, so far this is the only person who seems to have the right reply, right? The right answer.
You know, Tom Homan as well seemed measured in his initial remarks to this, saying they need to get more information before they proceed. You know, I should note that the shooter could have shot a fellow ICE agent. I mean, he could have shot
another agent on the other side of the vehicle.
And also, you could just capture the license plate and track the lady down later on. Later in the day, the Minneapolis Public Schools said they are canceling classes for the rest of the week because ICE officials or border security officials came onto school property and tackled some staff members and pepper sprayed people outside the school, causing mass chaos. I mean, I worry at this point whether or not the administration will use this as a pretext for once again sending National Guard troops into American cities and clamping down. That is, from the beginning of the Trump administration, that has been the real concern, that there'd be some sort of martial law imposed. And so let's just hope we keep a lid on things.
Outgoing Governor Tim Walz saying yesterday to President Trump and to Christy Noem, please leave Minnesota. We don't need your help. You've done enough already.
Well, and I think this actually is a really important tie-in. We know that the president issued an executive orders expanding the notion of what counts as terrorism to include extremism on migration. Right. And we also know that ICE officers are authorized to enforce federal laws and can arrest or engage suspects of domestic terrorism, even citizens, if there is that intersection with domestic terrorism or the notion of terrorism. And so we have in this scenario a narrative that's attempting to color the victim as a terrorist, I suppose, in this case, as a extremist on migration, whatever that means, in order to justify ICE involvement and use of lethal force against her under the belief that she's engaging in some kind of terrorism. And this is at a moment when the state is dealing with multiple attacks from the federal administration, attacks on the governor for the investigation on childcare subsidies, on food assistance during the pandemic, and now with the ICE and National Guard involvement on the ground, they have effectively pushed Waltz out of the governor's race. And I think that in some ways, the measured tone by some Republicans is actually an effort to galvanize support or hopefulness around a Republican governor after Waltz leaves office.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. We've already received quite a few. We expect to receive many more. Yours can be one of them. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return to the discussion after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Thursday, the 8th of January. Very nice to have you with us at 9:45 this morning. We are talking about the ICE shooting that took place in Minneapolis yesterday. And we should note, just for, I think, a little bit of context, that this was about a block and a half away from where the George Floyd murder took place as well. Also, the ICE shooting that took place and took the life of a 37-year-old woman. And now the question about what we see in the video and how the really two sides, but I know there are probably others, but two sides of this, of looking at it as self-defense or that someone was murdered basically in cold blood. Let's see. We have letters. Trisha writes, down that long road, even if the ICE agent were taken in, charged and convicted, he'd be pardoned in the end. This is another Kyle Rittenhouse, that from Trisha. Then we go to Stephen. Renee Nicole Good was 37 years old, mother of a six-year-old. I have two 37-year-old daughters, one who is the mother of a six-year-old. I see them when I hear about this atrocity, and my outrage is beyond civility when I hear responses from Noam and Trump and the like. My question is, can the state of Minnesota charge the ICE thugs who committed the crime, same as they did in the George Floyd case? Then also we go to Ken. Who are the real domestic terrorists here? Working mothers or roving bands of armed and masked violent mercenaries? Once again, and I think rightfully so, that question of the masks, and there is that presence, and you see that in the video very closely, actually, as the officers are approaching the car in those masks. You were talking about, you know, being scared for your life. I mean, just that in and of itself is scary. Ronald said the only way to stop this is to take back our government in the midterms and impeach Trump. Paul says, thanks to the panel for the thoughtful and fact-based discussion, a refreshing contrast to the reckless and irresponsible behavior by the DHS and the president. This incident was predictable, it was preventable, and totally unnecessary. Words that Governor Waltz spoke yesterday. What legal recourse does the victim's family have if the DHS actions are contrary to policy and laws? These are all still outstanding questions, right?
Well, federal agents are generally immune from state prosecution. So even if the state brought charges against the ICE agent, the agent's attorney would likely move it to a federal court and then seek it to be dismissed. you know, the public does have a right to sue agencies for civil violations, but they are really, really difficult, nearly impossible to win, really. Although police departments do pay tons of money to victims of excessive force in settlements every year, so it's
And the federal
possible.
Government does as well. Evidently, people involved in January 6th are receiving, you know, payments for their suffering.
Yeah.
I wanted to say one thing over the break. For some light reading, I read this book by Brian Vandermeer called Kent State, An American Tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was really interesting thinking yesterday, reflecting back on what was written in that book, because, you know, you see in Ohio, they set up this committee to investigate this, which is the type of committee I imagine being set up federally this time, where they singled out the vocal minority of radicals. And they spoke in the report, just to read from it, they said they fired their weapons as the National Guardsmen in Kent State. They fired their weapons on the honest and sincere belief under circumstances which would have logically caused them to believe that they would suffer serious bodily injury had they not done so. And I think you see in this case, as it went through, that first of all, there was incompetence on the part of the National Guard, which wasn't trained for doing what they were doing. And I think you see a parallel to ICE in this circumstance. And you see the politicization immediately afterwards. And in Ohio, at least, there was a sentiment by many people, including one of the co-chairs of the commission, that the people who died had it coming, right? The one of the co-chairs of this commission said that they should have shot more protesters at that point in time. So it doesn't leave me with great confidence. There were some federal studies, by the way, which were much more nuanced and which were much more revelatory. So maybe that could happen. But overall, the people who were killed at Kent State effectively never had justice served. And the sequence of events which led up to that, which was sending out National Guards people, giving them ammunition, which they shouldn't have had. And then it was a series of accidents which actually led to the shooting. Somebody shot in the air, and others thought it was an action to shoot at people. And in many cases, they tried to shoot over people's heads, and then they shot over people's heads and killed people beyond the people whose heads they shot over, which was really tragic. But it doesn't fill one with confidence that there will be the type of impartial investigation which will yield the results which I think the country and the person who passed away deserve.
Let's go back to the letters. There's also this question about there's been studies now of those who and I don't have the numbers in front of me, which I will try to find, but that a often used defense by law enforcement agencies is that a car was being used as a weapon against them. And I believe, I want to say 400 such cases in the last year. And the difficulty and inability in many cases to prove that one way or the other is very difficult. This case seems to be much different because of the many videos that took place. We go back.
Well, and because the rules and guidelines around ICE activity are different than
Correct.
Law enforcement activity
right.
on purpose, right? ICE isn't supposed to be out there fighting crime. That's not their job. Their job is to enforce immigration laws, which are generally civil in nature. So, like, ICE isn't designed or intended to be able to use a defense like, well, they were getting away. Because they're allowed to get away. Like, she's a citizen. She's allowed to get away if she doesn't want to talk to you. Right? They have no basis to
right.
detain her.
John writes, a grand jury should be convened to determine exactly what happened and whether any ICE agents should face criminal charges. Then we go to Tim. Said it is not only a fear campaign at this point, it is true incompetence to the most horrific extent. If there are any politicians left, they need to do what the Constitution states. Then we go to this from Raymond. I think this should make for a decent wrongful death case against the U.S. government. You can't shoot people just because they're trying to get away from you. This speaks to the administration's immigration policy. It speaks to the attitude and aggressiveness among ICE agents. It also speaks to excessive force by law enforcement. Then we go to James, who said his gun was drawn before she drives forward. Wouldn't you be scared for your life as well? There are several, and if you look at any of the major newspapers, they will have a still photo with a timeline. But before the car starts to move, you can see that the gun is out of the holster.
You know, law enforcement has long defended that argument by saying if I have the authority to have the firearm drawn, you're supposed to stop in your tracks and do what you're told, not the, like, flight part of that fear response. And that's been used to justify shootings for a very long time.
I mean, studies have shown that and very rarely does a agent or a police officer get convicted when a officer involved shooting when they shoot someone. It's hardly ever happens. But also in this case, let's not just look at the officer who did the shooting. Let's talk about the management system. The, you know, Kristi Noem, Stephen Miller, not President Trump, who have encouraged this kind of approach to rounding up as many people that they can deport as possible. That's where this message, this approach to doing the job of the ICE has taken on. I mean, and that's where the real responsibility needs to fall.
And one doesn't get the sense that, you know, if you took a deeper look, if you review the training, that the outcomes, given the current attitudes, would be restraint, right? Which is what you would want in law
enforcement. I don't
know.
She was wearing
officers.
A cowboy hat.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, exactly. And it's really disquieting to think about that. That there's, I would say, in the individual case, we can't know what was going on inside the head of the person who shot. Miss Good, but the circumstances in which it was found, and as Tim Walz said, I think very eloquently last night, we said this was going to happen, and it happened. It wasn't like people weren't predicting that things like this would happen.
Well, no, and there were so many officials from Chicago on last night who said the same thing. Like, we kept on telling you, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. We saw it happen at a lesser extent, obviously, in Chicago, and we expected it to happen in Minneapolis as well. And sure enough, let's go to this letter from Dan. The current administration seems to use the term, quote, terrorism a lot. It seems to be their get out of jail free card. Can the panel clarify for me if this is for legal reasons to give leeway in their actions to pacify the base or a combination of the two? The division in our nation is beyond sad. It's scary to see how many people on social media are regurgitating the words of Kristi Noem.
I think it's hard to get into the brain of this administration's leadership, right? I mean, it's a little bit like reading tea leaves blind. I don't know. But what I can say is what I suspect is that there is an intent to elevate what would otherwise be local legal matters to a federal level in order to allow the federal administration to use federal agents to enforce the law. So, like I said earlier, there's this language around whether or not the victim was a terrorist. And if she was a terrorist, then ICE may have had authority to engage with her. If she was not a terrorist, then ICE didn't have authority to engage with her at all. They were supposed to refer the matter and coordinate with local law enforcement. And so I do think that there is an intent to elevate the type of activities somebody's engaging in as terrorism so that federal agents have more authority to act, you know, particularly because it's not illegal to protest, right? And what we do see in the executive order expanding the language around what are terrorist organizations and how this administration is identifying the umbrella language around anti-fascism. That language includes, as I mentioned, extremism of migration, race, and gender in the same clause of that executive order, and goes on to suggest that the Joint Terrorism Task Forces are directed to coordinate and supervise comprehensive national strategy to investigate, prosecute, and disrupt entities and individuals engaged in acts of political violence and intimidation, not just violence, but also the intimidation that's designed to suppress lawful political activity and obstruct the rule of law. Can you say that protesting the disappearances of undocumented friends and neighbors could be considered obstructing the rule of law? I think this administration would say yes. And I think that this administration's intent is to stifle and chill free speech.
One more letter. We'll go to a break. Avery says, thanks for being here for all of us on yet another rough week in the news. A bit of advice for listeners out there. Over the last 2 days, I've been doing demolition on a project. I find listening to the roundtable and smashing things apart with a hammer is very therapeutic while listening. Well, that's what we do here in the studio.
Can we come? Is that an invitation?
Good luck, everyone, says Avery. It's going to be another interesting year. Indeed. We'll be back and discuss more interesting stuff right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I don't have to tell you, but the Northeast is unique. The people, the communities, even, yes, the weather. WAMC reflects that back to you each day with stories, news, and conversations that matter to you. And as a nonprofit, WAMC can only provide that vital service with a strong base of listener support. The lockbox is now open, and with a donation, you help fill it up and keep fundraising short. You'll also keep the programming strong, just the way you want it. You tell us that each and every fund drive. You can give now at wamc.org, wamc.org, and we thank you very much as the fund drive and the lockbox continue. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Jonathan Becker, Judy Patrick, and Nick Rangel join us, and we have another 25 minutes or so to talk about the issues going on. And I thought I'd go back to some letters, and then we'll move on here as the conversation takes us into other directions. Richard writes, panel, I can't take any more. I don't want to be an ostrich, but I just can't take any more of this Trump-induced lunacy. Please just give me some hope, some scrap, a little scrap of hope. Please, some scrap of hope that this is ending.
I personally think that the rise in mass demonstrations and protests is the hope. And the more people who are out there using their freedom of speech to stand up against whatever it is that is their particular issue is tremendous. And there's lots of ways that people can be involved in issues that they care about. They can protest and demonstrate. They can donate to organizations. They can provide pro bono legal service. They can be legal observers and just document what is happening on the street. And that is what the people who are recording that interaction yesterday were doing, is they were just observing. But that creates a record. It is testamentary of what is happening in people's communities and neighborhoods. And the more that's happening, the more these kinds of stories reach everyday people who otherwise maybe don't hear very much about the ICE engagement in neighborhoods. I mean, how much do we talk about ICE in activity in the Capital Region? Not very much. Why? Well, there's not a lot of documentation. You're not seeing videos of removals. People aren't outraged about removals at a level that they are in New York City, where they've blocked ICE vehicles from entering entire neighborhoods. So if I was going to say what is the hope, it is that people are getting engaged in the process, in the political process, which they have a right to do.
You know, I work with young people. I don't, as an administrator, I don't have to teach, but I choose to teach because I like working with smart young people. And they're involved in a lot of ways. I think of, you know, next week I'm going to Atlanta and I'm going to be on a panel chaired by Sierra Ford, who's a Bard senior, the speaker of our student government, who's the head of election at Bard, who's done amazing work. She's the student lead of the Let New York Vote Coalition, which is trying to pass legislation to allow more young New Yorkers on college campuses to vote. I work with people who work in Ramapo for young folk. I work with people who do ESL in the town of Red Hook, who work in the local schools, who go and teach music in Colombia and Kenya. So I look at young people who both do things like vote, but they're involved in a lot of different ways. And some might be protest, some might be social media. Yesterday, it was a very long day. I witnessed a hearing for a Bard student who's been detained by the Department of Homeland Security from Afghanistan. But the lawyer representing him worked in my office 7 or 8 years ago, and he is smart and young and ambitious and was doing a wonderful job. So a call out to Kevin Barbosa as well. It's very, you know, young people want to have a better future. I think we have to believe that we should invest in them and that something better things will come along the way.
I agree, and all of those things are absolutely true. I do feel for the listener, though, because, I mean, even yesterday before this event happened, halfway during the show yesterday, we all felt like we were just wrapped in these, you know, 18 wet blankets trying to get through everything that we were talking about. And that understanding that we all had in the room yesterday was that we're only getting to about 5% of what's actually happening because of all the, there's just so much stuff.
You know, you have to, every time I go into a Stewart's, for example, and someone holds the door for me or lets me go ahead of them at the cash register, I feel happy.
Yes.
You need to interact more with everyone that you come across. You need to establish those kinds of, second or minute relationships that, you know, make us come together. Look in your community and see them raising money for, you know, a cancer victim, or see that ultimately there are a lot of good people out there. We just need to have more positive conversations with them. You know, I have a lot of people who are Trump supporters in my life, but you need to keep them in your life. You need to discuss what's happening with them, and you need to appreciate that, you know, ultimately, we are a good people, that, and you will see this happen in the poll numbers. I mean, just watch the polls, what's happening. It can be discouraging at some points. I agree. But, I mean, even when you see, you know, you'll see maybe 60% of people do not agree with what's happening with ICE, but you see, oh, well, 40% do. That's discouraging. Look at the 60% that disagree with what's happening. And again, appreciate every moment you interact with another human being, and it's a positive one, because there's a lot of that happens every day in your life, Joe.
Absolutely. Every day. And I do. I mean, I look at those moments and I love those moments. And I mean, not to be, you know, not to have too much sunshine emanating from my pores, but where Judy and I live is just a gorgeous, beautiful place, and that helps. You know, you can see that beauty and see the nature and all of those things. So, in other words, what works for you? It's hard. It's really very, very difficult because it just doesn't seem like it ever stops. And I think the reason it feels like that is because it never stops.
Well, and that's kind of on purpose, right? It is the flood intent is to just be so overwhelming that we can't pay attention to the new immunization recommendations, and also this nonsensical food pyramid, and also ICE activity and also children being detained in Pennsylvania in abusive facilities. I mean, it's just too many things. And also Greenland, right? Like
Venezuela.
Venezuela. Like, what are we doing?
Increasing the military budget.
Pausing child care subsidies for New York State for no reason at all.
But I think Joe hit it right. We live in a beautiful area. Long walks are really helpful. I would be lying if I didn't say my head wants to explode some days at the end of the day. I think we're very fortunate to live where we live and to continue to be able to do what we're doing. We're still on the air. I'm going to put a plug for the fund drive as well, right? The lockbox, that's what we were talking about, because places like WAMC exist. We're very fortunate.
Yeah, I got my membership renewal notice. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to do that.
There you go.
Yeah.
As simple as that. We welcome you, by the way. Give us that plug. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. All right, back to letters on the program this morning. Wasn't it possible to disable a potential confrontation by shooting the tires of the vehicle rather than killing the driver in order? I've heard that a lot over the last 24 hours. I also heard about the vehicle behind the pilot of being able to, if the vehicle was leaving, to go after that vehicle as opposed to shooting at the vehicle.
It would have been safer for the bystanders to shoot the tires so it couldn't then speed off and cause damage to another vehicle around where other people are. I mean, yes.
Let's see. We go to James. They're being forced to close schools in a major American city because armed government agents are raiding and pepper spraying and terrorizing children and teachers at a school. This happened after Good was killed. That did happen yesterday and was also, we should note, documented on video. Michael writes to us, wouldn't it be more accurate to agree that it was both the ICE agent and the woman driving the car that are responsible for the shooting yesterday? Law enforcement officers should never position themselves in front of a motorist that has already demonstrated that they do not comply with lawful orders. And motorists should never accelerate their vehicles towards any pedestrian. They share the blame due to the poor decisions they both made. So your panel members are half right, and the conservative media is half right when you both blame the other side only.
Hey, the woman's 100% dead.
Yeah. Well, I guess I understand the point of the letter. I certainly do. What I do question is the idea that law enforcement officers should never position themselves in front of a motorist that has already demonstrated that they do not comply with lawful orders. I don't know that it was that this person did not comply with a lawful order.
Well, I don't know that the order was lawful.
That's it.
Right.
That's right. That's what I meant. Yes,
I don't know
absolutely.
That she had any obligation to obey ICE agent directions since she is an American and wasn't doing anything illegal to warrant ICE engagement, as far as we know. Right? Again, we don't know what led to, like, I guess there's an argument that she was retreating from some other activity. Again, that activity had ceased, and she was now leaving the scene. And if there was some unlawful activity, the ICE agent was obligated to engage with local law enforcement to enforce laws, not take it upon themselves to engage with that individual.
I think one of the issues here is the ICE isn't notifying the local police department when they're going to have an action in a certain neighborhood. And that may, if that notification happened, that may have helped calm the protest or whatever was happening. And because what we're seeing is that let that kind of chaos happen because the local police department was not involved.
Well, and under DOJ policy, placing yourself in the path of a moving vehicle constitutes officer-created jeopardy and undermines the claim that deadly force was necessary. Again, she didn't gun the car in the direction of ICE agents, as far as I can tell from the limited video. she did attempt to leave the scene, and ICE officers put themselves in front of a vehicle instead of not in front of the vehicle. She was aimed away from where the ICE officers and the ICE vehicles were. She was moving in the direction of traffic. She was clear, from what it looks like, she was clearly just leaving, which you're allowed to leave. And that is, I think, the critical moment. Was she allowed to leave or was she not? Was there a reason, a lawful reason to detain her, or was there not? And I don't see how that argument can be made, except that Kristi Noem is trying to allege that she was some kind of terrorist.
The other thing, too, one interpretation is that by backing up so that you can turn the tires more to the right to avoid, to straighten the vehicle out to be more in the middle of the road, which happened, where the car was initially put in, the Honda Pilot was initially put into reverse, moved back, put into drive, and then turned. So it would seem to me that another interpretation could be that if you wanted to, quote, mow people down, that you just put the car in drive and go.
Right. Yeah, she wasn't gunning.
Right.
As far as it appears.
Again, one interpretation.
You mean I would hope that the takeaway of the listener would be the deeper issue, which is that independent of the facts of what might have happened yesterday, the root causes of what is going on is the militarization of American society, the huge expansion of a massed, poorly controlled police force that is descending upon a city which doesn't want them, and the predictions of people, including Governor Walz, that things like this were bound to happen, right? As I think we said, we may not know what was in the head of the person who shot the victim. But we do know ultimately that they were there for reasons which I don't think were necessary. And we believe, at least, and I think Judy began this by speaking of the need for calm and exploring what is going on and trying to learn more. I, however, given the immediate responses, feel confident in my deep skepticism that the Department of Homeland Security will not be the entity which conducts a truth-seeking operation, that they are so politicized and so focused on implementing policies of the administration, which are numerically based, not justice-based, that we don't expect good things to come of that or enlightenment to come from that.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's see. Kathy says, yesterday, one of the panelists said we should be out in the streets protesting. You have several organized possibilities. Indivisible is planning another protest day, and the Women's March has designated January 20th as a day to protest. Google Free America Walkout to get details and find a group in your area that are planning on walking out. Several high school civics teachers in our area are planning on taking their kids to the streets as well on the 20th. We must show our solidarity with immigrants, the poor, minorities, and children, and let the government know we are angry, we are sad, and we are disgusted. We check in with Linda. I suspect the ICE officer fired on the vehicle because he was outraged that she wasn't following his orders, not because he feared for his life. And then we go to John, who says, I hope everyone takes an opportunity to listen to how Fox is reporting this incident. I have not done that. I don't know if anyone in this room has.
Oh, I have.
Oh,
you've got. Well, you know, it's. I always, like to see the spin, how things get spun, and it just helps you in your head figure out where things are coming from, and I would encourage people to be skeptical of a lot of information that's out there, especially. Today, you're seeing a lot of bad AI videos, artificial intelligence videos, memes, photos, from both the left and the right, but far more from the right at this point, trying to justify what happened yesterday. And Fox is a mild version. You'll see even more far-right influencers doing far more damage to the truth today than Fox. I mean, but Fox is a good Fox. I would encourage people to watch Fox once in a while just to get a sense of where what your neighbors are thinking, because they are influencing what your neighbors are thinking.
We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. What do you think the next 24 hours is going to bring? We saw a peaceful protest last night, and we, which, thank God, they were peaceful. That's good. And where we go from here? A lot of questions to be answered.
You know, a year ago on this show, I talked about my prediction that the administration would kind of drum up reasons to deploy more militarized forces against protesters. And I think that is what we're seeing. If you do something that triggers protests and then protesters arrive and an administration considers those protesters as, you know, terroristic in some way, and just calls everybody Antifa for whatever reason, then they have an excuse to send those armed law enforcement agents and ICE agents and Homeland Security agents and whomever else they deputize. And when you have armed individuals at any protest, there's always an enhanced and greater chance that lethal force will be used or that excessive force will be used, because those clashes are inevitable. You see that if you're a law enforcement department that is not wanting to escalate a protest, they don't confront those protesters with excessive force. But once you bring force into a confrontation, it only leads to escalation. I think the intent is to trigger riots, and I am really fearful for movements whose intent is to cry outrage at the disappearance of their friends and neighbors, to then be facing excessive force use under the guise of, you know, ending riots and clamping down on protests that are escalated out of control. So just be safe and careful out there. And I guess that's all. I don't know where to go with that other than be safe and be careful.
Yeah, know your rights. You know, I worry about escalation as well. The good news is it's the middle of winter in Minnesota, so you're less likely to get a huge crowd out there, except the weather's not terribly frigid in Minnesota, and they are Minnesotans, so they wouldn't care so much about the cold. But that is the concern. More information is going to come out today. We're going to find out more about what happened, and the question is what the quality of that is and what it says. And, you know, this could go very poorly if more information comes out, more videos from a different angle that show even a more egregious conduct.
And I briefly think that we won't see the Epstein files and we won't see democracy in Venezuela. That's my prediction for the next 24 hours. We will see a vote in the House, though, on the Affordable Care Act, which I think will move forward to renew some of the funding after the Senate haggles things through. So for our listeners wanting some slightly positive thing, I think there will be something taking place along those lines.
Yeah, there are budget bills moving in both houses right now, which would defer a full shutdown by the end of the month, which I think is, I don't know, good in some ways.
All right. We're going to hold it there for this morning. My thanks to our group. Jonathan Becker, Judy Patrick, Nick Rangel, thank you all for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And good luck at the egg today.
We'll be back right after this short break.